Someone else from outstate?
Okay. All right, we're back on the record. Mr. Simpson, do you have a witness you intend to recall at this time?
I think at the request of the commission, the company recalls Mr. Clark.
Okay. And Mr. Simpson, do you have any questions for Mr. Clark?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Hsu? Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, anything?
I did have a question, but I might have to be prompted by Commissioner Kalk.
All right. Commissioner Kalk?
Because I was just talking to Jerry about something else.
Sure. All that pressure, all the discussion we had over lunch, Alana. All right. Well, thank you, Chris, for coming back up here. When we talked before, I guess I didn't fully understand that your answer to the question about why we can't do longer than that, or maybe it was Randy's question. But so could you guys do a two-year rate freeze, two additional 2 years instead of the one in exchange for the extra time in the RTF? Or is that a deal breaker?
I think it's probably a deal breaker. Okay. We haven't done the full revenue analysis, but I did have a chance to talk to Dave at the break. And I think we'd have a couple of concerns. One, we would have things coming into service that we'd be creating lag for. So we would have a revenue deficiency that we're not in seeking to recover. And two,
so when you say things coming in, you mean non-transmission things?
Right, capital projects.
Okay.
So we have that piece, and then secondly, I think we'd be stacking up a bigger deficiency for the year when we do come in. And my experience is the short-term benefit of avoiding case is always nice. If you stack up for a big increase, then that can be harder on customers too.
Sure.
So I try to moderate the pace of necessary increases. Now that said, we'll do a more formal analysis as we move through 16. We always look for ways to try to avoid a case if we can, but we owe our investors the obligation of filing a case when we need to, and our customers to continue investing in the system. So I don't want to be in a position where we start feeling like we should put off projects because we've overcommitted to a rate freeze.
How about a carve out that would do something of where the first year is the way it is now, and then year two there'd be the opening that if the company felt that there was a revenue deficiency, the commission would entertain that request? I mean, it gives you what you're looking for,
sure,
but it puts a little more. But
to file.
You'd still have the opportunity to file. It wouldn't say you couldn't file, but it would say that your intent would be not to file unless you feel you're revenue deficient amongst the level that you couldn't reach.
But, I mean, I think that's how we normally operate.
Right.
I guess I just do want to be clearer.
No, I get it.
I've done the homework to make that commitment today, and I don't want to make that commitment before we've done it because then we start answering.
No, don't get too cute. That's good advice. The did you do a revenue analysis on the one-year extension? Or is it just kind of that's kind of what we needed to do?
No, I understand it was part of the back and forth.
Hang on, Mr. Clark. I guess your mic is not working. Oh, it's
blue
just
light's
turned on.
Okay,
all right.
Sorry.
Probably need to go back.
Yeah, for purposes of having a complete record, unfortunately, we're going to have you repeat your response to all of those questions that Commissioner Kalk had.
My mic was on, so I'm good.
We're going to need to get Mr. Clark's responses, I guess.
He agreed with all my questions?
Not quite, I don't.
All right, so basically I guess to highlight what I think I just asked, so would the company be agreeable to a extending 2 years, vice 1 year, the rate freeze?
And my answer was no, we're not in a position to do that today.
Fair enough. And I think that was probably the gist of the question. And then I further went and talked about a little carve-out, and you answered back and said that probably wouldn't be a good idea either.
Again, right, we have not done the homework on that, and so don't feel like I'm in a position today to make that.
Okay, and I think I just asked what kind of analysis you did on the one-year freeze.
And I am aware that Dave worked to do an analysis on the one-year, and we were comfortable making that commitment. We just haven't done that analysis on a second year.
Okay, and then the last line of question, I guess, is what if we go the other way, that we'd accept this settlement agreement, but to say there will be no RTF going forward, we'll just accept the way it is, and the RTF is business as usual. How about something like that as an agreeable settlement agreement?
So we so we accept the pieces of the negotiated agreement. We just forego the RTF.
Correct, and we just put this thing to bed now, and we go back to if you want an ADP, you ask for the ADP. If you don't, you make a decision to come back in a rate case. I think clarified, at least my position, that just because we said no on an ADP doesn't mean you're going to get zero in rate case. That's a different discussion. What would your thoughts be on buttoning this thing up? We make a decision and we move through. Would that be a deal breaker?
I think I'd answer it this way. Certainly to the extent the commission wants to go there, we would continue to work for solutions that we think are good for all of our customers. I think in talking about what the RTF or alternatives to the RTF would be today, I think we've certainly taken ideas away from the discussion that the commissioners have had with us and have additional things to pursue. I would hope that we would still be able to do that. I think you can do that under the existing framework. I don't think the existing framework of business as usual ADPs sets us up well for the long term, so it's not my preference. But over the short term, obviously the commission will make its decision today and we'll work with advocacy staff and try to make the best of it going forward, both procedurally and in the spirit of what we tried to accomplish in the negotiated agreement.
Okay, and I'm still, and I think I'll flesh that out with Mr. Diller, that if we, at the end of the day, if we don't come to an RTF, we agree with exactly that means. But what do you think it means if, let's say we'd approve this the way it is, and then we don't come to some agreement on RTF, what model do we go back to then?
Well, I think that's a certainly a possibility that you approve what's in front of you today. That sends us off to work on an RTF. We bring you something back, and you say, I don't like that. And you either say, go back and try again, or you say, we're just going back to business as usual. I do think that going back to business as usual is an option then. I also think we have the benefit of some additional time where we can maybe see whether a couple of other pieces have fallen into place. Do we have a better sense of where states are going on CPP? Do we have a better sense of whether the Minnesota Commission is warming up to what we proposed in our October 2nd? Are we working through and should be able to show some of those details, like the cost effectiveness of the Eastern North Dakota CT, the cost effectiveness and sensibility of the gas at Becker, where the Sherco units are? Are we making progress on understanding of life through 60 on nuclear, and kind of commitment to other pieces of that overall resource plan?
So you feel the discussion about RTF would be helpful for North Dakota jurisdiction, but also for the prepping of the battlefield, if you will, in other jurisdictions about what may be coming that you'd like their approval on?
I think it can be helpful. I think it is a piece in this conversation to try to find solutions, and I think there are a lot of opportunities to explore, including that we could end up saying, you know what, separation is just the easiest path to go here. I personally am hopeful that we can get to something that doesn't take us to separation, because I think over the long term, the integrated system not separated will be better for customers. But I also accept that that is my opening assumption, and that we have to work with the realities that we get as we move these ideas through different in front of different commissions and get feedback on that.
Okay, and my last effort, just like Zev always did before break, what about 18 months instead of 24 months?
On a rate stay, I can't commit to anything more than we already committed to, just because we haven't done the work and we need to do our homework before we make those commitments.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchuk?
I don't think I have any more questions. Thank you.
Commissioner Christman?
I don't know how to really phrase it in the form of a question other than pointing something out and asking you to respond to it, I guess. But regarding your discussion with Commissioner Kalk about the problems of doing the two-year rate freeze and potentially backlogging some costs and that they become more significant then. Is that a pretty good explanation of the concern that you have with that prospect?
Yes, to the extent we are to extend a rate freeze, we end up building up costs that we could have come in, and then you end up with a higher percentage increase hitting customers when you do come in for an increase. And I think while there's the short-term benefit of the lower rates for customers, that bigger step increase can often be more painful than the more measured increases. That's one of the things we've been trying to do is, and I think we did successfully in the rate settlement here in North Dakota, was have a more predictable set of rate increases over the period.
It seems like the time to be concerned about large rate increases was before going to Washington, D.C. and celebrating the Clean Power Plan. But we know that's coming, and to the extent that we put this, hold a rate freeze for an additional year beyond what we've already done, but not do 2 years, we set it up. We almost, by doing the additional year, we almost invite a rate case in 2018 and cause us to be sitting here doing a rate case knowing that in just a few months, the state implementation plans come out and the whole world changes. And that just seems, is that not a really poor timing for a rate case when in just a few months state implementation plans are coming out?
I appreciate the point because I think we all are dealing with one of the biggest unknowns that we've dealt with in this industry, and that's state implementation plans under Clean Power Plan. That said, I think that the cost that will drive a rate increase in this period that we're talking about are capital projects for things that we're doing at our nuclear plants, for work that we're already doing on the system, that as that goes into service, then we come in to recover that. Whereas with the Clean Power Plan and the state implementation plans, even the actions that we're looking at taking are out later in the period. Now, we have identified in the October filing the pursuit of some additional wind and solar, but you'll either know by the time we file that next case that those things are on path to come into service or that they're outside of that rate case window. So I think a lot of the costs and changes coming from state implementation plans are out past that 2020 time frame, with the exception of some of the renewables. I mean, even with the proposal for the Sherco 1 and 2, you've got the replacement gas CT in North Dakota that we're talking about by 25, and the gas at the Sherco site at Becker we're talking at in the mid-20s. Now, obviously, we're interested in getting our work on planning, permitting, and all those pieces that we do benefit from having. The more time you have, the better we think we can plan and implement that. But I don't know that it's driving significant costs in the 2018 time frame.
Well, I really think it's critical that be extended as well as the RTF. And so, but you did say that you were going to go back and run some numbers and work on evaluating that possibility, right?
We did the evaluation for what's in the agreement. We certainly don't oppose taking a look at what we're currently forecasting for a deficiency in the following year.
Okay. No other questions. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchuk?
I decided I better ask while you're up here.
Okay.
Because I might regret it after Mr. Diller takes a stand. So
come back after Mr. Diller.
Well, we'll just go for it now. Do you sense that Minnesota objects to the principle of paying for energy policies that your state has approved and is requiring, paying for those increased costs for your ratepayers? Do you think that they object? Is your sense that they object to that principle?
I don't think they object to paying for what they order. I think they approach it with an overall view of the system, which is driven by their acceptance of Minnesota policies and then ongoing efforts they have in looking at the system. So I think the rub is that when we have the conversation with the Minnesota Commission, and we haven't had a lot of the formal exchange with them, moving this forward will help with that. But some of the pushback we've gotten from Minnesota is, don't they understand our view of the overall benefits to the system of what we're doing? So being an early adopter on solar, even though it's not necessarily a lease cost, is good because we learn how to integrate that into the system. We get familiarity with operating our system with that component in it. I think even with biomass, it's viewed as that was an experiment that was important to do to get a sense of whether it's an effective baseload resource. And I think biomass is probably one that the Minnesota Commission looks at and says that turned out to be more expensive than we would have liked without getting that downward trajectory on costs. Whereas with wind, they would look at it and say being an early adopter was really good for the system because Xcel learned how to be a very effective integrator of wind with its other resources. So I think there's a different mix of costs and benefits that they're looking at when they see it, and that the Minnesota commissioners, and again, I don't mean to speak for them, I just mean to give you my impression, that they think that they are building the right portfolio for the customers of Minnesota and that the overall system is getting those benefits as well. Then you get to externalities and you really have a sharper disagreement about how to value certain things where the state legislatures have put out guideposts that are just very different for Minnesota Commission versus the North Dakota Commission. Okay. Am I answering your question? Mm-hmm. Is that helpful?
Yeah. Do you, and then in Mr. Diller's testimony, he says, takes time for a large utility to change direction, but I recommend that the commission stand firm and require a less integrated approach going forward nonetheless. And he goes on to say how Minnesota is never going to go back to least cost planning. And part of the transitional difficulties to a North Dakota specific energy plan is that the simple approach of allocating a greater share of agreeable plants to North Dakota and none of the objectionable resources likely increases the cost to Minnesota and lowers the cost to North Dakota. So basically he's saying it's going to be more expensive for Minnesota if they can't spread some of those out, even 5% across North Dakota customers, and so they're going to resist that, and therefore you guys are resisting it. That's how I kind of read that. What do you think of those, that analysis?
I think Mr. Diller's testimony, as I reread it getting ready for today, it makes you stop and think, and it really makes you think about what the potential solutions might be. I think that the states are on very different trajectories about where they're headed with energy policy. But that said, I think both states are grappling with how are they going to build a state implementation plan? How do we make sure that we continue to get the value out of the integrated system across the region, including the benefits that we've all seen from MISO? And I think there's an acknowledgement that regardless of where you are on Clean Power Plan, at least when you look at our system, you're looking at a significant transition of baseload resources over the next 15 to 25 years. And that there may be more opportunities for alignment, even though there are some current differences between the states. Mm-hmm. So I think Mike has a good perspective in his testimony. I do think that as we get more information from the states working to implement the state implementation plans, as we see where regionally we might be going, there may be a new value proposition there for the integrated system. And I think, you know, for the Minnesota Commission, one of the choices might be to play off something that you said earlier is what set of compromises would sound good to Minnesota, knowing that North Dakota doesn't want to pay for some of the things that Minnesota wants to do, but is willing to pay for some of the things that, quite frankly, Minnesota is not as excited about anymore. And I would cite in that last example, primarily nuclear. The fact that North Dakota is still a big supporter of nuclear, I think shows that there's a solid piece of the system that North Dakota is willing to support, and that's part of the integrated system. For me, when you look at what we were able to accomplish through the negotiated agreement, before the negotiated agreement and the restack efforts, we were on a path to lose North Dakota from paying for not only seabed, but the biomass. And having North Dakota be willing to consider a different approach to that, that's valuable. And I think there's a good alignment there with nuclear for that. Likewise, resolving the 12CP issue was a significant, that would have been a financial challenge that we would have had to go back to other jurisdictions and say, this isn't working very well. I don't disagree that the states are going to continue to have differences about how quickly to adopt new technologies, where a price premium is worth paying. I do think there is an opportunity to explore continuing operation of the integrated system that provides value for both states and, quite frankly, the five-state area. I do accept, when I read Mr. Diller's testimony, that we might not get there and we might be with a wholesale or a legal separation. Mm-hmm. Over lunch was saying, in one sense it would be easier just to show up and say, let's put the stack on the list. Let's get both commissions live and let's do it here, Sherco 3. North Dakota, you'll take some of it. All right. Minnesota takes less. Nuclear, will you take it with the biomass? Don't want to, but you will. New solar, not as excited about that in North Dakota, but Minnesota is. So I think there are lots of places we can go in exploring the restack. I think it puts the burden on us to try to have these conversations and facilitate these conversations, and that's really why we're supporting it as a good next step.
As the longer we talk about this, the more I am trying to figure out a mechanism whereby commissions can collaborate. And I don't know what that is. I don't know. We somehow have to break free of all of the legal and regulatory handcuffs that we all have in our various operations to be able to have those conversations somehow. So we need to be thinking about that differently. Maybe this is a tool to do it.
One of the things that I took away from listening to the commission this morning is that and having the conversation or the cross-examination is that perhaps a formal process for approval of the resource plan facilitates some of that mm-hmm. back and forth. Obviously, I raised issues where I thought it could create additional complications. But in listening to the discussion, I also think there may be opportunities that type of a process could be used for us to facilitate a back-and-forth conversation about, look, North Dakota is willing to support this piece of what we've filed. You're willing to support this piece. Here are a couple of different compromises. Are we getting closer? Mm-hmm. Now, certainly that could just turn into a never-ending, you never get to the finish line. On the other hand, I think, again, the burden's on us to see if we can come up with a way to help facilitate some of that dialogue.
Thank you.
Mr. Simpson, anything?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Hsu?
Nothing, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
Yes. Thanks, Commissioner Kalk's questions, and Commissioner Fedorchak's prompted me to find my question in my notes. What I was thinking before the break at lunch was if there is an extension on producing the RTF for 2 years or even 18 months, but you do not promise a rate moratorium, but the commission decides to order the 2 year extension anyway, isn't there kind of a de facto rate moratorium? Because if you file a rate case, a general rate case, then everything's at play anyway, including whatever you're working on. I mean, it's going to, if you file a rate case in that second year, it's going to kind of defeat the work you've done on the, or could defeat the work you've done on the RTF up to that point anyway, because it could all be at issue and litigated and opposed. Which sort of leads towards, well, that's okay, don't make them promise, and it also leads towards you being more willing to promise a two-year moratorium.
I think based on my understanding of the negotiated agreement and when I think about what we're trying to accomplish, I think the pressure remains on us to make as much pressure, as much progress as we can, as quickly as we can. But I'm not in a position where I can agree that I think just avoiding that second year rate increase is the right right thing necessarily for our company or our customers. I do recognize anytime you file a rate case, you sort of put everything up at issue and to be fair game. So I can't disagree with that piece. I just am not in a position to say that it's the right result for customers and the company at this point. Yeah.
No, and I understand that. I just wanted your take on whether filing, I mean, the company, if the company chooses to file in that second year, if it goes that way, the company is acknowledging that, that the work on the RTF, if it's not finished by that point, is at risk by filing.
I think that's my understanding of the agreement. We've dealt with the past issues, the things that the RTF is trying to deal with going forward. To the extent they're not resolved with an RTF, they're at issue in the rate case.
Okay. That's all I have. Thanks.
Okay. Commissioner Kalk, anything? Commissioner Fedorchak? Commissioner Christman? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Clark. Go ahead, Mr. Simpson.
Sorry. I just want to make the record clear. This is the lawyer and me, Mr. Clark. But the same, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco's premise, the opposite is also true, which is if the company were to file a rate case during that second year, it need not necessarily impede the RTF as well. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Nothing further, Your Honor.
I wasn't sure I was going to give you that.
Thank you, Mr. Clark.
Thank you.
Mr. Simpson, anything from the company further at this time?
The company has nothing further, of course, reserving the right to recall witnesses.
Sure. Mr. Hsu, are you prepared to go at this time?
Yes, Your Honor. At this time, advocacy staff would like to call Michael Diller.
Do you have any exhibits? Is Mr. Diller's
his
testimony
argument stipulated to and should be on the exhibit list? It was submitted along with...
Oh, I see. That's Exhibit 5, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Diller, before you testify, I must give you an oath, and I'm required to advise you of the penalty for perjury in North Dakota. It is a Class C felony, punishable by a maximum fine of $10,000, maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. And being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Diller, I believe your testimony has been stipulated to and should be marked as an exhibit in the current case and admitted to the record. I was also informed by you recently that you have prepared a brief introduction. Mm-hmm. Proceed.
Okay. Commissioners, Judge, thank you for this opportunity to testify in favor of the negotiated agreement. I want to stress that I am very much in favor of the negotiated agreement, even though my testimony might seem tacit at times, testy maybe. I recently completed a personality profile to help me decide what I should be when I grow up. And the profile that best fits me is that of a results-oriented persuader and inspirer, which might explain the pushiness of my testimony. As you know, personality profiles also identify weaknesses for you to work on a little bit, and mine was, unbeknownst to me, I can apparently be obstinate, tactless, and sarcastic at times. And so that's something for me to work on. But nevertheless, I hope you will look past my weaknesses and consider my testimony anyway. For about 100 years, NSP has provided electric service in North Dakota, but was unwilling to place generation facilities in North Dakota. Of course, all that changed when they figured out what wonderful wind resources we have in our state. And in fact, we've got two big wind farms being built as we speak. The negotiated agreements, I think, strengthens the possibility, the probability of having thermal generation located in the eastern part of states, eastern part of the state, specifically the Fargo area. And so I am all in on the negotiated agreement. The negotiated agreement provides a substantial penalty for not getting thermal generation built by 2025, and the penalty is not contingent on obtaining an approval from the Minnesota Commission. The timing of the addition matches the timing of the resource needs. NSPS capacity generation located near its largest load centers and all the other states it serves, thus creating internal pressure to get this done if for no other reason. It has been a long haul to get to this time and place in history. There's been a lot of rancor, a lot of noise in all the ADP hearings and rate case proceedings, and even some staff filings in front of the Minnesota Commission. But I think we're on the cusp of a new day. And so I think today we should celebrate just a little bit. The negotiated agreement declares with certainty which existing generation resources are acceptable for cost recovery and that correspond with North Dakota's policy of least cost planning. Therefore, if this agreement is approved, the table will be cleared of past disputes and sets us on the path of developing a resource treatment framework for dealing with future generation resource additions. Of course, working out an RTF will require some consideration and diligence from both NSP and staff. And it might not be easy. It may not be easy. It will likely require NSP to do its work a little differently. It will likely require staff to yield to realistic and achievable outcomes. For example, if an integrated least cost plan cannot be achieved because Minnesota, who makes up 75% of NSP's system, will not submit to it, North Dakota cannot realistically expect to obtain that particular price for energy. It's not achievable. On the other hand, NSP cannot expect North Dakota to willingly accept the exportation of its green policies if North Dakota by itself or in conjunction with other utilities can obtain less expensive energy or capacity elsewhere. We are not here to debate RTF today, but the influencer in me remains. And so I just suggest this something to think about. I strongly support the negotiated agreement for all the reasons stated now and in my testimony and everything that you've heard from the NSP witnesses. This completes my opening comments, and I look forward to our discussion.
Mr. Hsu?
No, Director, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Simpson?
Inspired and influenced by Mr. Diller, I have no questions.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
Convinced by Mr. Diller, I have no questions.
Oh,
no.
Man, I'm on a roll.
All right. Commissioner Kalk?
Like they always say on ESPN Sports Game Day, not so fast, my friend. Okay, Mike, so I appreciate your work and staffs and companies and all this. I know you guys have worked really hard in this for a long time. The one thing, and your testimony, I think, is very clear. You think it's a good deal, and you quite honestly moved up the potential for the thermal generation by a significant amount of time. I think I've said before, it's a pretty good basis here for a person to approve this agreement. But I just want to get clear in my head, because I haven't been able to piece it all together. You talked about if we reject it, that we should give some guidance as to why we would do that. And if we reject it, though, how does the cost allocation go for the projects that are at play now? I can never keep that straight. Could you kind of do a walkthrough? Okay, the commission walks away from this. Where does the two Pleasant Valley and Odell project go to? Where does the biomass, where does that leave all those? I'd like a little more clarity on that.
Well, if you reject the settlement agreement, then that cudgel that we called it in the comprehensive settlement agreement may go away. I think there's some legal arguments that could be made that.
Well, but that's what I want to.
But I'm not the lawyer, and if you want that explored, you can order the lawyers to write up their thoughts on that. But I'll tell you what I think happens. If you deny this, seabed costs continue to flow through the fuel clause adjustment just like they are now. And the same is the case with the biomass. I believe Odell was listed specifically in the cudgel, so Odell, the Odell wind farm would be in. Pleasant Valley was addressed separately in the comprehensive settlement agreement on page 17, and I'm thinking that without looking, I'm thinking that that Pleasant Valley then, if it's not part of the cudgel, and we denied it in that, I think Pleasant Valley would not be allowed either, I think is what, does that take care of all of them?
Well, that's what I'm going through in my head. I think that's all of them, and I recall it the same, but the Pleasant Valley, I think, I agree with you, is not allowed. The seabed and biomass through the fuel clause. And what was Odell again? How did you explain Odell?
Odell was also part of the cudgel. It was listed.
So those costs are already going to.
Those were out in the comprehensive settlement agreement. We brought them back in through the negotiated agreement. If you deny it, I think Odell is in, but I might be wrong on that without going through the settlement agreement.
So why in the heck would we disallow it when they've got a deal here to offset some of these costs? And I'm trying to understand what Xcel thinks they're gaining out of this. If we denied it, then they get a lot of these, the Pleasant Valley, I guess I'd have to look at those numbers a little bit better.
Well, one of the things both parties are gaining out of this and hasn't really been talked about too much is we agreed in the comprehensive settlement agreement to work with each other. And so we are working with each other, and we're building relationships. We're building the potential for better things in the days ahead. And I don't think while there's no value, dollar value to that, I think there's a lot of value to being able to work together. And so the reason I was able to get to allowing biomass is I took my responsibility serious in that comprehensive settlement agreement, and I promised to consider the cost that would put on NSP. And so when NSP went to Minnesota and begged them to cover our costs of something that we've been paying for in some cases back to 94, and the Minnesota Commission's staff said, "You're crazy," I understood that. I would say the same thing if I was sitting in Minnesota. What? We did that so you could have cheap nuclear power. So the whole process was trying to be fair and just with each other. And when both parties do that, you generally can come to a good conclusion.
Okay. And I think that I'm just trying to get the true numbers talking about. I mean, the money that Xcel is giving up by removing the community-based, the seabed project, I mean, that's theirs right now, and it would be theirs forever if we reject this. I mean, that's clear, correct?
Well.
So I'm just trying to. So what do you think got them to this? Is it because the 12 CP that they wanted to make sure that was in there so they're willing to give up some of this other stuff?
Settlement agreements, neither party gets everything they want, and so there's give and take. And I don't know exactly why NSP did what they did. I only can tell you why I did what I did. I wasn't inside of their head enough to know why they did what they did, and I could just guess and pontificate, but I don't know.
The point is they brought it to the table and you were happy in certain areas.
Well, we got to a point where I was satisfied, and so okay. We signed the agreement. Yeah.
If you could have got one more thing, what would it have been? What was the next thing you were trying to get?
I'd have to agree with Dave Cedarquist. I would have preferred to have the RTF done. I appreciate all the complexities that have been raised this morning from the various witnesses. I think the complexities are in the implementation of the RTF, not so much in the RTF itself. RTF is a foundational type of an agreement where we agree to operate in this manner with these kinds of considerations. I don't know that we have to build the house today. We're just laying the foundation. And I think that you can lay a foundation, and it's probably my naivety, but without confusing it too much with the complexity of implementing it. And quite frankly, I'll admit that I'm sitting here as a state employee, a staff for the Public Service Commission, and I don't really have an appreciation for all that complexity, and I purposely am not even interested in that much, because this company's chosen to work in multiple states. It has an interchange agreement with Wisconsin because it's more or less required by the way that all is set up. I can't confuse myself or delay myself from action worrying about what this company has to do to meet all of its obligations that it's taken on willingly by itself. And so I think if you go back and listen to that, my opening comments, we are not that far apart from being able to agree to an RFT. And I don't need 2 years, but maybe the...
Well, to follow up on that, Mike, you're not that far apart, but so what is the framework that you're not that far apart on? Because I talked with Dave when he was up here, and there's a lot of soup to nuts what it could be, but, I mean, the ADP, you make a decision in a rate case. I mean, what is the... You say you're ready to go now. The time is for them. So what would the framework be if you had the magic wand right now?
Well, I'm trying to think how to approach this.
Maybe I should rephrase the question. Yeah. Maybe to get to the point where, yes, it's not to decide that today, but your testimony basically said the additional time is more for NSP than for staff. So you would think that when I'm asking about 2 years, that, hey, listen, make them do it in a year or don't.
I think a year is enough myself. They can recall their witnesses, but I think they agreed to it originally, so they shouldn't have a problem with it. They're just, they're trying to listen to the commission. So
you think that framework could be developed outside the clarification that may or may not come from the courts on all the...
There's always going to be confusion. You pick a time in history, there's always going to be confusion, okay. Uncertainties, risks, all of that is just it's just a normal course of business. And so I don't know. I think if we're going to delay things for the Clean Power Plan.
What's next?
A different president, a different EPA administrator, a different maybe there's World War III and we could give a crap about all of this stuff. You just can't. You can't anticipate everything. And so my style, my persuader, inspire, results-oriented profile suggests that you keep moving forward and, do the best you can.
So what is the deadline? I'm sure it's in here somewhere. When the RTF would have to be fought?
February 1, 2017.
Okay. So let's just for discussion, we approve this settlement agreement. We agree to everything, and you give them their year. The cost gets clarified. But at the end of that, a year from now, we still haven't got an RTF. Then what happens? Then what do we roll back to?
We can ask for an extension. We did it in the first comprehensive settlement agreement. We can ask for an extension if we need it.
What if it just times out? Then what's the mechanism going forward?
Times out.
Let's just say that a year from now, you guys haven't figured out a format that works. You don't the time just expires. We've already answered these questions about cost and the stuff going back.
I don't know that we have a cudgel in there. We just are professional people, and we will get it done when we say we get it done. And the company will get it done. If we can't get it done, we'll ask for an extension. And if you don't like it, you can do what commissioners do. You can have a lot of angst, or you can maybe penalize the company. I don't know what you're...
Well, I'm just thinking that by going... Okay, what if in the meantime Xcel's got to be making decisions about future investments? They want to start coming in for ADPs 8 months from now because they've got things that are popping up that they need. The Clean Power Plan looks like their Sherco stuff's more in jeopardy, so they want to start filing ADPs. Does this stop their filing of ADPs? Does this stop their...
ADPs will continue until an RTF agreement is in place, I would say.
So does that...
In that scenario, it just argues for getting RTF done sooner, not later.
So where does it say that ADPs continue until this is done? Is that in there somewhere? Or is that just your understanding of the discussion? Because I'm trying to clarify this.
Sure.
Because I didn't... Either I couldn't remember it all or I didn't read it.
I don't know if it's stated, but people are shuffling through papers, so maybe...
Okay, well, and we'll... Zev just found something somewhere.
See.
Yeah,
page 5. In the event that the company proposes other resource additions between the date this agreement is executed and the date an RTF is implemented, the company will bring these resources for approval before the commission, consistent with the way we've been doing things.
Okay, so you guys have that outlined in there. Okay. Okay, so the company feels that the 1 year is appropriate and they don't want to – well, I didn't say that. The company felt that they were willing to take more time, but they were only going to extend the rates freeze for 1 year. You think that the 1 year is fine all the way around? There's no reason to extend it any longer?
I think the negotiated agreement as is perfect.
Otherwise, you wouldn't agree, right?
That's right.
Okay. I think, Mike, let's say we go with 1 year. How often, what kind of interplay, if any, do you think that the commission should have of this before it comes to a hearing a year from now on the RTF? Should we have a role with the incremental steps, or should we just wait to see what you guys come up with?
Based on what I've heard today, it sounds like you have an interest in being a participant, and so I think that's easily accomplished. I think once we have a bone with a little bit of meat on it, then we can have an informal hearing and tell you about the direction we're going and listen to any input that the commission might have.
So if we're going to stick with the 12 months, which is in there, should we do that quarterly? Should we do it 3 times a year? What kind of schedule should we have on that?
Well, 3 months is nothing in this business, so I guess I would suggest by July 1, have an informal hearing by July 1 to apprise the commission of where we are and whether there's been any progress or not.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mike.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thanks, Mike. So you, Commissioner Kalk asked you what the settlement, like what the agreement on the RTF is, like that you're so close to, because we didn't hear that there was much of an agreement. I didn't hear the company say that there was, you know, anything specific, and I didn't hear you tell him what it was either. So what is it that we are close to agreeing on?
Well, you know, when I say stuff like that, think about it this way. We have, what do we have, 3 nuclear units, a bunch of coal units, gas units all over, wind farms all over, hydro. We're in agreement with, you know, 97% of the generation resources that are in play today. We just argue a little bit about solar and the stuff around the edges. the reason I said that I don't know if we're that far apart, I'm gonna take you through a silly example to maybe, I think maybe there's some value in it. I was just gonna chase to the end, but so Just bear with me, Zeb. Yeah. And all you people with lots of, because this might be insulting to the resource planners, but you guys all have pencils? Okay, good. So let's say that least cost integrated system plan addition is $3. Let's just say $3. See, we want to get rid of all that other minutia. $3. The Minnesota approved resource addition is $5. Okay? Now, what I'm asking the company to do, and they've not acquiesced yet, but that's the point of having more discussions on RTF. What I'm asking for is, what if scenario A exists where North Dakota can bring on a resource addition at $2? Why would we want to participate in least cost planning in Minnesota for $3 or for sure with Minnesota's plan of $5? So put the resource in North Dakota for $2 and go it alone. Either go it alone North Dakota or go it alone with other utilities in North Dakota, other arrangements like that. Well, so let's go to scenario B. What if North Dakota only is $3? Least cost planning is $3. Minnesota wants to do $5. What should we do? We should do North Dakota, $3. We maintain control of the asset. It's in North Dakota. It's still least cost. And we can do it ourselves in North Dakota. What if scenario C happens and North Dakota only is $4? Should we insist on $3 because that's least cost planning for an integrated system? Or Minnesota's preferred plan of $5? It should be $4. Why should it be $4? The $3 one isn't achievable. Minnesota makes up 75% of NSP's business. And so to hold to some theoretical number that is not achievable, in my mind, isn't just and reasonable. Just and right. It's not right. So we build it in North Dakota at $4, go it alone. Scenario D. What if we could do it ourselves for $5? Least cost plan is $3. Minnesota will have nothing to do with it. They want to do it for $5. We put it in North Dakota because we control the asset. That way we don't have to worry about Minnesota changing their minds 5 years from now and decide that we're going to prematurely close down all the gas plants in the state. Last scenario, what if North Dakota only scenario is $6 and the Minnesota approved plan is $5? Will we be crazy not to participate in the Minnesota plan? And so there is my, just without getting involved in capacity, energy, clean power plan, and all the complexities that these people have to deal with, I don't want to be insulting, but and throwing out a rudimentary example like that, but it at least makes you think. It makes you think about where we might go in an RTF.
So, I mean, in theory and principle, that sounds great. But even I, as much as I like principles and theories, can't get past the question of, is that realistic? I mean, can you do that?
Can we do
what you just outlined? Like, you know, there's a resource addition needed, and North Dakota wants to pay $3, but we don't need all of it. We don't need all of it. Maybe it doesn't. We don't need 100% of it. And Minnesota says no. We don't want to be part of it. So then what?
I think what I've laid out here is achievable because we are no longer looking at least cost planning. We are looking at what North Dakota could do it for versus what Minnesota wants to do with all of their green initiatives. So there's, actually, there's less work involved. You're only comparing what the Minnesota plan is with what can be achieved in North Dakota or with in cooperation with other utilities. And so, to me, that's fairly straightforward.
So in order to get to what North Dakota can do, what how do we get to that?
Well, that's Mr. Hager's job. It's he's the resource planner. That's why I'm...
But when you say what North Dakota can do, do you mean like building generation in North Dakota and what it would cost?
Sure, yeah, sure. So
that would be one of the alternatives they would have to look at.
So maybe putting a rice engine in Fargo next to the one they're going to build before 2025, maybe that is least cost planning for North Dakota compared to adding solar in Minnesota. And so what I'm asking Mr. Hager to do and his duties and responsibilities to North Dakota consumers is let's at least look at the possibilities of North Dakota only and how does that stack up with the Minnesota integrated plan. And, you know, if the Minnesota integrated plan with all the economies of scale that are afforded through that is less, then by golly, we go along with Minnesota.
So when you say North Dakota only, are you saying then just them looking at what they would need to build in North Dakota to meet North Dakota's need, just North Dakota's need, or what they'd build in North Dakota to meet the system
need? Now you're starting to drill down into some more complex questions. And that could be that should be part of the RTF. What is the goal? Are we trying to... Do we want to go just with a North Dakota capacity and that's our responsibility, or a piece of the MISO capacity requirements? I think the company would argue piece of the MISO capacity requirements. And so we would have to meet that, whether it's sharing in all the legacy plants and a rice engine in Fargo, or however we do it. We would have to come up with our share of the capacity requirements of MISO for NSP company.
Okay, so you saw Dave Cedarquist's testimony and his kind of analysis of the four things that you guys looked at. Do you agree with his analysis of that? I mean, what you're proposing, I don't see where that fits in here. On any of these.
Let me see if I can find Dave's.
It's on page 7 of his. Starts on page 7 and goes to page 8.
Well, without reading through all of them, I quickly acknowledge the benefit of economies of scale. I don't want us to go down a completely divergent path. I would like to stay connected as much as we can. And when we can't, we've got to figure out a way to make decisions without all the rancor and noise that's been so far. And that's the purpose of an RTF, the purpose of developing that approach to dealing with that. I'm not in favor of having our own legal entity. I would be scared to death of FERC deciding what costs are assigned to North Dakota and which ones aren't. I would think that the North Dakota Commission would want more control over that, not less. So I've spoken generally too, I think. Mm-hmm. Do you have a specific question beyond that? Or?
Well, I mean, he lays out, you've got the states ensure full cost recovery for resources that they direct Xcel Energy to acquire. That's one thing. That seems to be the most straightforward, in my opinion.
Yeah, the front end resource approval, that would be fantastic. Yep.
Number two, the repricing, least cost proxy price.
And we've talked a lot about that, and that seems like that's just a administrative nightmare. It's only get more complex as we go along. So,
and then the price zoning, is that maybe what you're kind of describing here? pricing zone concept?
You know, I'm not even sure what that is.
And then the final one would be to go off on our own.
Yep.
Okay. What about your comments about we should be willing to stand firm and require a less integrated approach going forward? You're not that forward to be just really simple-minded. I would that would lead me to think that you think it's okay for North Dakota to be separate and just have NSP North Dakota and choose like the fourth option.
Yeah, I use the word less integrated for reason. I would prefer to stay integrated for 90%+ of it. It's just that the only time we're not integrated is when it costs $6 to do it ourselves, and NSP Minnesota, the Minnesota plan, can do it for $5.
Then you want to be less integrated?
Then I want to be together. If the Minnesota plan is less expensive than what we can do on our own or in cooperation with other investor-owned utilities or co-ops or whoever they might be, then we remain integrated. I'm only saying less integrated for when, let's say the Minnesota Commission just goes completely nuts and orders things that are way outside our acceptable levels of cost. Well, certainly it's likely we could develop our own resources for less. So we would not go the integrated route in that situation.
All right. On the page 4 of your testimony at the bottom, you say the straightforward, simple approach doesn't work if Minnesota will not pay for the cost of its own green initiative, but that is a burden placed on NSP by North Dakota, and we should not feel the urge to bear it. That leads me to believe, and some of your other comments too, why not just use the AEDP, the current process that we have, where we're accepting what we think makes sense and rejecting what doesn't? Those things that are like the 3% of things that you're suggesting, I mean, that's what we're doing already, rejecting those things. And then the company has to go back and figure out cost recovery with Minnesota or the other entities. What's wrong with that? RTF?
I guess I would call that second best.
What's better about an RTF?
Well, an RTF is it's deciding up front how the process and the method that you're going to deal with new resources. So whatever that process is, hopefully will make the decision making, will make the allocation of costs understandable up front for NSP and for staff and for the commission. There'll be an understanding of okay, if you're going to do that based on the RTF, North Dakota's not participating in that because Minnesota's required that it be built in Minnesota, and it's expensive. Okay.
So you're saying basically then you can avoid the trouble of an ADP process?
The company can always ask for ADP, and they may still ask for it just simply because it gives them some assurance of cost recovery. But it certainly would make that process easier and maybe not even necessary. That would be another part of the goal of RTF. I think it would be great if we could to dispose of ADP cases, because all of us know what the rules are going forward. So,
all right. Do you think that this RTF framework would need to be approved by other states, or is this just us and NSP?
I don't think it's necessary for other states to approve our RTF, how we are going to deal with various, I mean, it's, of course, would be great if we all could agree. And maybe there is an opportunity for that. It seems to me like Minnesota knows what it wants and North Dakota knows what it wants. Why couldn't we craft something that the three, that both states could live with? But as far as do we need to require that it be approved by Minnesota? I don't think so. It's an agreement between North Dakota and the company is how it's going to deal with future resource additions.
Okay. When the seabed projects were originally approved, was it back then, if I'm understanding this correctly, in exchange for keeping nukes? So that was the agreement from the beginning?
I don't think we probably ever did officially approve seabed projects. They just rolled through the fuel clause adjustment, and they've been going through the fuel clause adjustment for many, many, many years. It's just that as we started getting into the various kinds of resources and with that lofty goal of let's try and develop a stack whereby in the end the stack will represent what North Dakota would have chosen all along. Maybe that was too lofty of a goal, but that was our goal.
What I'm trying to get at is I've always wondered, and I've never asked, so now I'm going to, why did we agree with those? Why have we agreed with those all along? Why didn't the commission put their foot down years ago on those seabed projects?
I was here, so I can. initially, in fact, I wonder if, well.
The megawatt size. Committee commission had weighed into before. We've been lowering the weighing in, but they were smaller than the 50 megawatts, so we never spoke on until it became
an issue. Wanted him to answer.
Well, no, but I mean, I could just.
I agree with Commissioner Kalk. It started out small, and so we thought that's not worth our time and effort. But as it grew and become more of an issue, and quite frankly, when we started down the path of trying to find pressure points with this company to get them to build generation in the state of North Dakota, that was just one of the tools that we used.
But were they part of, when they first came about, were they something that the Minnesota Commission said, okay, we'll agree with nuclear, but then we're going to do seabed, like we're being told today? They're a package today. Have they always been a package? Is that how it all started?
Seabed?
Yeah.
Seabed and...
Is it seabed or... No, I'm sorry, the biomass. The biomass, I'm confusing them. The biomass projects today are kind of in connection with the nuke.
Yeah, you know, I don't know the whole story behind. I'm not in Minnesota. I'm not negotiating deals with the environmental community like NSP is doing. But my understanding is that those biomass facilities were indeed built to keep open Prairie Island's storage, to continue storing nuclear waste at Prairie Island. That's my understanding.
And we knew that at the time, and that's why we didn't object.
I don't know if we – I don't know what we knew at the time. I just knew that it was small, and so we probably didn't even look into it.
Okay. All right. And then two more questions. This idea of doing an integrated resource plan that we would approve, what's your thoughts on that and how that might be a tool for the RTF or part of this process?
I heard lots of things sitting over there listening to the conversations, and an IRP just with North Dakota or some kind of multi-state IRP or...
Right. Well, one that, like Minnesota does, they have a plan.
Okay.
They have to prove it.
Yeah, I found all that to be really interesting, because I'll bet you I've been arguing for that for 10 years, and Jerry Lean has fought me the whole time and said, no, we don't want to get in the business of approving things, because if it turns out bad, then we can second guess. Now he's coming around, so he'll probably fight me on RTF, and in 10 years, let's do RTF. But.
So you like it?
Well,
or open,
no, you know what? I've moved on past that. I'm looking forward to RTF and establishing a framework, establishing some foundational principles by which we can live going forward. I think if you try to do it through an IRP, I think you just move the angst and noise from ADPs to IRPs, and then you get in an IRP and you're looking at a plethora of things to argue and fight about as opposed to one single issue in an ADP or one single unit. I quite frankly, Commissioner, I'm not sure how I don't know if I can verbalize all my concerns, but I'm looking forward to going forward on a principle-based plan. And the RTF, we should be able to establish a framework that works for NSP, works for North Dakota, maybe even works for other states. I would prefer to do that than argue about it in IRP cases.
Okay, and then my last question. You seem to dismiss this clean power plan's potential to affect both this process and just the whole decision-making on generation in the future. Why? Why do you think that isn't, like, a major consideration at this point?
I know that's very important to the commission and utility companies. And if it's dismissive, it's just because I'm, in my own mind, I'm not sure where that clean power plan is going. We could have Donald Trump as our next president. Things could change. I just see the clean power plan as another big uncertainty for sure. And we deal with it as it comes, however it comes.
Should we be more, like my colleagues are kind of promoting here, more conscious of the timelines of that plan and trying to mirror this major change to those timelines so that it all can be considered at the same time?
I would say if the commission is really worried about time frames associated with the clean power plan, I mean the company's already said we don't mind stretching out the term. I'm not married to it. It's not high on my list of concerns, and so if the commission's more in tune with the clean power plan than I am, and if you guys would like to slow it down, I would certainly support that.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Commissioner Chrisman.
Thank you for getting to the point so well. I had about five questions to lead up to getting to that point, so that's out of the way. And that probably only leaves me with one line of questioning. In your little model that you laid out with the $3, $4, $5, and $6 power,
yeah.
It seems to me, in listening to that, and it was helpful, but it seems like you make an assumption there that when Minnesota state government plays their social engineering games with utility companies, that we can just ignore that and go our own way until there comes a point when we will benefit from the economy of scale, and then they're going to continue to share that with us. And are you not a little bit skeptical that they're going to say, well, no, if you don't help out with our social engineering projects, then you're not going to benefit from our cheap nuclear or some other thing that's on the table at the time that they benefit from their large scale?
I think what you're asking is Minnesota will just decide if we practice this Mike Diller method that we're not participating in the integrated system planning or allocating of costs any longer, they would make that jump, and what would we do?
And I think to further clarify, I think the ultimate question is, will that not just lead to us ending up with option number four here, that it's a restructuring and we're off on our own pretty much all the time?
I don't really know how that would play out, quite frankly. I haven't given that particular idea a thought.
Well, my other questions were answered. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Hsu?
Mike, you are not aware of all the legal processes and requirements of other states for approval of an RTF, or is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. But moving forward, the company will be collaborating with advocacy staff as well as the commission in finding all, in delivering all the processes and all the best options to the commission. Is that correct?
Sure.
Pursuant to the agreement?
Yes.
That's all the questions I have.
Mr. Simpson?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
A couple questions. Mike, you've mentioned a couple times, and this is a quote, I think, but you've said something similar, but, you know, that what your objective is to produce some foundational principles by which we can live moving forward. That's the point of trying to get this framework developed. But what was going through my mind as you were discussing it, before you got to the A, B, C, and D, and E, but for 115 years we've had some foundational principles to determine whether to pay for something or not. And they make perfect sense. And don't you agree with that? The standard rate-making principles.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that throws a wrench into it is the policy things that come in over the top, whether it's pro or con. But is it not possible in rate making to sift those out and still use the original rate making principles to make decisions?
It certainly would be possible. We've done it for the last 100 years. We could do it another 100 years. But I think, one of the reasons we have this thing called ADP is to take out some of the uncertainty for the companies. And so I think deciding how to handle things up front, I think that takes out some uncertainties and it provides them with some comfort in how it conducts business. And so I hear you, and we certainly could continue to do it in that way. Yep.
So I appreciate that answer, and I guess I would ask, and I'm thinking the answer is yes, but what you're envisioning would take out more uncertainty than even ADP does. It would make it more certain than even ADP might do.
Well,
is that your opinion?
Any time that you can have an agreement between parties as to how we're going to proceed and no longer be at odds every time we come together in this room, that diminishes uncertainty. Yep.
Okay. And then that should have a great effect on cost of capital, right? And lower it for everybody.
Well, we are enjoying the lowest cost of capital that I've seen in 28 years of working here. So, yep.
That's all I have. Thanks.
Commissioner Kalk?
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to apologize to my colleague, Commissioner Fedorchak, for answering her question. It was a very hot topic, and I wasn't sworn in, Judge, so you might have to strike that from the record.
Certainly.
Just a couple more for you, Mike. The IRP discussion, I've always liked not weighing in IRPs until the time is right. And that's because I don't feel that a commission should bind future commissions. But you think it's worth the change in business?
Huh? Oh, I just made the observation that I argued for it for a long time, and now Jerry finally comes along and supports me, and I've moved on to RTF. So
okay,
so I'm not arguing for approving IRPs today.
One of the things that two thoughts left, and then I'll answer any more of Commissioner Fedorchak's questions. I think the ADP process gives them good certainty in the sense they know where we're at. But I've got the sense in this hearing today that companies feel, and maybe even yourself, that because we don't grant an ADP, you think that we won't grant anything in a rate case. I'm just curious if you could elaborate that. Am I misreading what's happened today here? But it seems like there's more taken in ADP than what my intent was. If I don't want them to come back, I'll say don't come back with prejudice.
Yeah. Well, I kind of appreciate the wiggle room that the commission is creating for itself down the road in the event that you deny an ADP and then you find out later that, oh, we should have taken that. And so you can walk back into the proposal somehow. To me, ADPs, here's the basis for an ADP. It provides you an opportunity to decide whether something's reasonable and prudent at the time it's being considered. If you wait till, for a rate case to come 7 years later, an ADP, well, now we've got ADPs coming before, but in the past, we've had rate cases where you couldn't even remember what the cost of gas was when they made that decision 7 years ago. And so an ADP creates a time and space for the commission to look at it while it is being considered currently. Then you don't have to make all those kinds of adjustments.
But don't you have to do that anyway, because you don't ever allocate a certain cost in an ADP? You just say, yeah, it looks reasonable. Yeah. At some point, there will be a cost component, which you'll have to go back and unpeel the onion when you get to that point.
So my point is if you make that decision at the time it's all being considered, I'm not sure how you turn around later and go, it wasn't prudent when you did it, but now we think it's prudent later.
Well, I think that's a discussion for. I think we're functionally looking at it differently, and
we are. I viewed it as a denial of advanced determination of prudence. That means it's. I think the law says something about that decision has rate implications. I don't know how it reads specifically, but the law says that a denial of ADP has, or an ADP has rate implications. So if it means you grant it and it has positive rate implications, certainly if you deny it, it must have negative rate implications. I think the company itself is more in line with where I'm at, but I can't speak for them.
Okay, and then the last thought, Mike, is you shared your thoughts about whether you'd support a settlement agreement if we extended the time frame out to 2 years for the RTF discussion. But what if we just stripped the whole RTF discussion away? With all the agreements that have been taking place, if they get this and North Dakota shareholder ratepayers get this, but we just end this right now to where there'll be no more RTF discussion. Everything's agreed except RTF is done. We go back to ADPs, and would you be able to sign that kind of settlement agreement?
Okay, so the 2017 moratorium would remain. We'd eliminate the seabed costs.
Right.
The $25 million penalty would stay in effect. If $9 million in benefits for including Odell and Pleasant Valley wind farms would stay.
Right.
I don't know why I wouldn't support that. I mean, that's...
If the company came back and wanted that moratorium for rates to be taken away with that RTF, would that be going too far? So there was no rate moratorium for the additional year.
Yeah, that one is a hard one to qualify. I don't remember.
About $10 million is what you put in your testimony.
Okay. Yeah, based on the last rate case. I might have implied that, but it could be $20 million, it could be zero, it could be $30 million. But based on the last rate case, yeah, $10 million a year seemed like a number at least you could hang your hat on. So I feel a little like Mr. Clark. I don't know what to say.
You'd need some more time to evaluate that. That's fair. I just trying to walk through because I try not to talk too much, but it never happens.
I'd be fine with taking out. I mean, if we get all if we get all of that and we just decide to do things on an ADP or rate case basis, I guess that would be agreeable to staff. I feel like that we're going, that's a totally different direction than the way I've came up here to support, and that's, I still think it'd be of some value to see if we can't develop a framework for dealing with these things going forward so that Minnesota understands, North Dakota understands, NSP understands.
That's where I think I'm asking these questions so when we get into that work session, but I think the point that Lana fleshed out is we have that framework now. And whether the framework can be approved, that's a separate discussion, and maybe it's worth the time. But I,
Maybe the way to look at it, ADPs, you know, unit by unit, an RTF is like a wholesale look at something. It's a holistic approach as opposed to piecemeal. But okay. I guess with all that other in play, I mean, I would still feel pretty good about a settlement agreement, I guess.
All right, thank you, sir. Yep.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
No other questions, I guess, other than if the witness could answer why he thinks Commissioner Kalk wears his hair so short. Or maybe you want to answer that.
Because he has a good-looking face.
There you go. No questions.
Commissioner Christman?
I expected more. I don't think I have any other questions.
Mr. Hsu?
Well, let me throw one out. The last questions you answered kind of wandered of different options for doing this differently or not at all and such. If big changes are, if this isn't approved, the old requirement on NSP that I think exceeds that is placed on MDU and Otter Tail, that they come with ADPs for some of these small to mid-sized type projects. Do you think that requirement in the year 2015, almost 2016, probably goes too far and has us managing the company instead of just evaluating real large-scale projects?
That'd be a great thing to pursue in the RTF, to think about changing structures like that. You know, the reason where we're at is because we got worried about what was going on in Minnesota, and so maybe we overreacted. Maybe that's the point to your question. You know, 100-megawatt system-wide is 5 megawatts for North Dakota, and so requiring them to come in here for a 50-megawatt ADP, that's 2.5 megawatts to North Dakota. That sounds pretty small to me. So what's the right amount? I don't know, 200 seems like a number that keeps popping up. If we wanted to go the other direction, I guess, again, we can handle that in a rate case. We can handle it in ADPs. I guess I'd leave it up to the company even, maybe. They're the ones that want the clarity, whether or not that resource is going to be, whether they're going to be able to recover the costs. And so could we just eliminate that altogether and leave it up to the company like we do with MDU and Otter Tail? I guess we could.
Okay. No other questions. Thanks.
Mr. Hsu?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Mr. Simpson?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
Nothing further.
Okay. Commissioners, anything else?
No.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Diller.
I messed it up too bad for you.
No.
I'm going to have to call all your witnesses.
Thanks, Mike. We have nothing further, Your Honor, unless the commission has anything.
Okay. Mr. Hsu, did you have anything?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
I just wanted to offer Jerry Lane to take the witness stand if commissioner, any commissioner would like. I was asked at the break about that possibility. He is available.
Okay.
Commissioners prefer to have Mr. Lean testify to address any questions?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Commissioner Florchek?
Well, I can ask him separate from this, too, can I?
No, it's not on the record. Whatever he has to say is not on the record. This is why the topic came up. So, you know, it's not mandatory, and we were not intending it, but if you'd like to ask him a question, he should take the stand.
Do you want to take a short break before Mr.
Lean? I would rather just
proceed.
It's not going to be long.
Okay, all right. Come on up, Mr. Lean. Mr. Lean, before you testify, I'm required to give you the oath, and I must advise you of the penalty for perjury in North Dakota. It is a Class C felony punishable by a maximum fine of $10,000, a maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. And being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, do you have any questions?
Well, I just ask Jerry to please state his name, spell his last name, and describe your occupation and your position with the commission.
Jerry Lean, L-E-I-N, and I'm a utility analyst in the Public Utilities Division.
And Jerry, can you give us a summary of your education and experience?
I have a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering, and have worked with the commission for nearly 30 years, minus a little bit of time that I worked for the Nevada Commission.
But you've been in utility regulation for 30 years or close to it.
Yes.
And just very quickly, the areas that you concentrate on in your work?
Mostly it's just matters relating to electricity.
Okay. That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Simpson, any questions?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Hsu?
No questions, Your Honor.
Commissioner Kalk? Commissioner Fedorchak?
Okay. Jerry, so you were the one advocating for the IRP, and now I hear that this is a new position for you, thinking that this might be the solution, having an approval process for an IRP. After all the discussion today and the rationale that both company and staff have provided for the RTF instead of the IRP, what are you thinking now?
Well, you know, I've never been totally against it. I've felt that we were able to make things go here on an informal basis, because if you start approving an IRP plan here and another state approves something differently, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. And we managed to, for years here, to make things go by observing the plans and trying to work informally with the company. But, you know, it seems like anymore we're getting on more of a divergent path with Minnesota's philosophies. And I've thought that maybe an IRP plan where you don't approve the whole plan, but you just approve an action plan. The last chapter of the plan might be your action plan for the next 3 years or 5 years, and that's the part that gets approved. And so then that would mean, looking forward, you expect those things in that plan to be done, or else there'd be an explanation and a change in the action plan, maybe at the next IRP, but there would have to be a reason why it wasn't done or something different was done. I've thought lately, listening to this stuff today, that, and maybe I'm off in fantasy land here, but the thought occurred to me that we have a regional state committee for transmission matters, and the SPP has one, the OMS for the MISO matters, and we've done state subgroups on other things too. We've got three states here, and you would think that maybe there could be some kind of a way to get together on resource planning for NSP. Call it an NSP Regional State Committee, try to develop it and see where it goes. The three states involved could work on putting the committee together and what the rules and bylaws or anything else that they want to have are, and do decisions have to be unanimous, things like that, but the objective being to give an approval to the action plan on the IRP.
Okay. It's an interesting concept, and maybe it'll be one that's floated into the discussion over the next year or 2 years, whatever it is, because I was kind of thinking this similarly. I mean, there's some concerns about what you lose in terms of your jurisdictional powers, but also it's so cumbersome trying to get each various commission to provide approvals, and it's just never-ending processes back and forth, and it's costly for the company, and it's then ultimately costly for the ratepayers. So,
you know, I could add that it would maybe give the three commissions, a chance to talk about cost allocation as well,
mm-hmm.
and put the commissions out in front of all of this instead of the companies and the staffs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No other questions. Thank you, Jerry.
Commissioner Christman. Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, anything further?
No, thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lean. Anything further from the parties? Mr. Simpson, do you have anything further at this time?
Just a brief closing at the appropriate time, and then I think we'll need to do some housekeeping, but I don't know that we need to do that with the commissioners.
Sure. Mr. Hsu, do you have anything before we move into closings?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
Nothing further. Thank you.
And just for the record, there are no longer any members of the public present, so we don't have to worry about public testimony. Everybody here is either party or party representative or PSC staff. There was one member of the public present earlier, Carly McLeod, and I did ask her if she intended to offer any testimony, and she did not. So I think at this time we can go forward with closings. Mr. Simpson, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Your Honor. I'll just be very brief. We've had a long, good day. This was an important step in what's been an ongoing effort to try to bring clarity here, and we think the negotiated agreement is a reasonable way to address many of the issues that have been here before the commission, and we ask you to adopt it.
Thank you. Mr. Hsu?
Yes, Your Honor. Obviously, both parties here are in favor of the negotiated agreement. There are a lot of benefits that you've heard today. Some of these are, as soon as this would get approved, there would be a reduction in rates, rate moratorium, the inclusion of two low-cost wind resources. There's a commitment then to have North Dakota generation, and also an incentive to do so. We believe that this follows cost causation and could also fits within North Dakota's least cost planning, and also the disallowance of the 15 community-based energy development programs and the two small solar programs, due to the cost causation in Minnesota, would be beneficial to North Dakota ratepayers as well. Furthermore, we believe a clean slate moving forward would be advantageous as things do get complex and allows us to create this framework as we've been talking about all afternoon and morning in order to address these uncertain times moving forward. Thank you.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, any closing comments?
None, thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Kalk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Interesting enough, the commissioners are getting together in Texas for the MARC annual meeting in January. And we put out a list of questions that commissioners want to talk about, and the number one feedback I got was divergent state policies. And so that's going to be a topic that all the commissioners talk about as one of our keys for the next conference. So anyway, just a lot of folks are thinking about it. The settlement agreement, I think I said in my earlier remarks, I like the way the settlement agreement is structured. I really like where it's going. I'm just trying to figure out if there's ways we can make it even better. But I will say this, that it's a settlement agreement between the two parties, so I know that if we start tinkering around with it, the whole thing can fall apart. So I don't want to risk that. I will tell you that, because I think there's some really wins in what I've seen for North Dakota ratepayers in clearing up some of the costs of those smaller megawatt generations. So for me personally, I don't want to jeopardize the work that you folks have done. But in my discussion with my colleagues in the work session, maybe see if there's some envelopes of things that we can maybe put a little framework around. And the big one where I think I'm still hung up at that'll flush out in the work session is, you know, do we go to a two-year vice to 1 year, or do we just strip it away? That's the one thing that that I guess as we get into the work session, that'll be the one question that I really want to clear my mind, because the rest of it I'm pretty clear on right now. So just thank you all for your good work.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
I, too, want to appreciate or share my appreciation for the settlement. I think there's a lot of good pieces to it, and I think clearly there's wins for both sides, and so I appreciate that, and I appreciate the hard work that went into getting it done and getting to this point. I came in pretty convinced that we should just go back to the just we've got a process in place, let's just follow it, use the ADPs and allow that process to work. But I am more convinced now that there probably does need to be a different mechanism in place. the light bulb went off, and I don't remember who flicked the switch, but that maybe the ADP, the RTF process could actually prevent the need for an ADP, because it provides even earlier guidance for what is and isn't going to be acceptable. And so I think that that's a process worth seeing through. If you can get to a an agreement on what that principle might be for North Dakota, and then however that affects the other states, I'm not sure. But to me, it comes down to one issue, because as Mike identified, you know, we agree on a bulk of the resources. So really at issue is the least cost planning. We're still firm with that, and Minnesota's moved much more directly to an environmental planning process. It's even stated in your IRP. That's what it is. It's an environmental resource plan. so there's going to be challenges moving forward on that until we come up with a mechanism for dealing with those issues where it isn't least cost. And so, you know, I think that the obvious thing is what Alana stated is you want more expensive, greener energy, you pay for it. I would advocate for that, but we'll see how the negotiations develop and how that could be carried forward. But I am supportive of the 12-month process if we can get it done. I also do see value in my colleague's suggestions that it mirror some of the timelines on the Clean Power Plan. So we'll discuss that further in our work session and hopefully get an answer pretty quickly so you guys can move ahead. So thank you very much.
Commissioner Crispin.
Well, I'm kind of torn here between, you know, continuing to follow the basic rate making practices as we've done in the past and moving forward with this settlement. It seems like it's easy to say yes, this has worked for 100 years, but I'm not so sure that it's working very well the last few years, or that at least there's not signs that it's not going to work well, in especially this particular case with such different philosophical governments as Minnesota and North Dakota. And so maybe we do need to look at something else. I really look forward to the late filing about that Lana asked for, I believe it was, regarding basic rate making principles and such. If we do go ahead with the settlement, and I don't know, I guess with due respect to the company who makes a good case for it, but they have something to gain by it. That's your business. but especially toward advocacy staff, all the work and the strong belief in this, certainly I find that persuasive. And if we are going to go ahead and make some philosophical changes here and enter into a settlement, I think generally this settlement looks pretty good. I don't think it looks great. In fact, rather than good, I would say it looks reasonable. I don't think there's anything here to be high-fiving or doing end-zone dances over, but it seems generally reasonable. I find one exception there. And in the last month and a half, I covered health department meetings on their state implementation plan from Williston to Fargo. Cumulatively, there were well over 1,500 people that showed up at those. And almost all that spoke expressed very strong concerns about where our electric system is going. We heard from people who are very fearful of losing their jobs. We heard from business people who don't know how they can remain competitive with the cost increases that they're facing. And we heard from people who are just very much in fear because they're not high or even medium income people, and they don't know what kind of a personal hardship this is going to place on them just to continue to live a normal lifestyle with electricity and heat and cooling. And so I guess maybe I take the state implementation plan of the Clean Power Plan more seriously than most after hearing from the people who spoke at those hearings, and then the ones that buttonholed me in the corner and kept me from leaving till close to midnight at some of those. You know, there's a lot of people who just don't want to speak up at in a room full of people, but they sure let you have it when it's over with. And so it is a very real thing. And so I think if we are going to move down this path, I think it's critical in light of the fact that, yes, we will always have another hurdle or another point of uncertainty. Those will always be there. I've been involved in government, not here so long, only 3 years, but in government for over 20 now, and I don't know of anything that is causing more uncertainty than this Clean Power Plan. And right now it looks pretty certain that state implementation plans are going to be due in very much the same time frame. And so I think in order to move forward, it is critical that we be able to make the two small changes of having that RTF approval and the rate increase moratorium pushed back another year. So,
thank you. Just before we close, I'd like to address a couple things. One, there was reference to a late filed exhibit. I believe it related to licensing information for nuclear facilities. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe so.
That will be late filed. They'll just be identified as Exhibit 6 then?
Sure.
Okay. And I believe that was the only late filed exhibit that was going to be submitted. And that will be any time frame within for getting that in?
You know, we can get that in whenever you guys want. We're cognizant of just the holidays coming up.
Sure. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, does the commission need that document with any certain time frame?
Well, the commission would need it in order to have, you know, consider it at its work session.
I would think we'll schedule a work session probably tomorrow, and it probably wouldn't be till mid to late January.
Yeah, so whatever works, because we would need those briefs, too.
Right, and that's the other thing, I guess, was briefing. There was mention of briefs, and I don't know what particular, you know, issues the parties were looking to brief. Is the scope going to be limited on this, or is it just open to whatever each side wants?
There's really only one legal question.
Yeah, I think that's right. What I would propose, subject to somebody kicking me under the table or somebody else saying no, is we'll shoot for about 30 days to file the late files plus the briefs, and that Council for advocacy staff, advisory staff, and the company will talk in the next couple of days to get the issues down right. I don't believe there's any real issues with respect to briefing the material at hand. It's really some underlying legal issues that we're either going to try to get on the same page on or we'll have to brief for argument.
So it's only the company that's going to be briefing, advocacy staff? You're not intending to file any sort of simultaneous or responsive brief?
I'd like to leave it open for the opportunity to file a brief if we feel that it is needed.
A responsive brief? And how?
It's a joint.
Well, that's my point. I mean, it's both sides are supporting this agreement, but so you want to have the option to file a brief at the same time that the company's brief would be due.
We'll be talking about the legal issues moving forward, and I anticipate there will probably just be one brief, but I just don't want to close the door on the possibility of needing to file a brief as well.
And I think what I'm hearing here, Your Honor, is essentially the commission would like to get together for a work session as in all due haste, and certainly none of these materials will be ready for that. I think it'll be helpful for the parties to watch that work session as well, and then the parties can identify those legal issues that are necessary for briefing and any other late files, and we'll try to work through this 30-day clock so that it's timely before the commission when they plan to get back together.
So bottom line, you don't want me to set a date for the briefs to be due, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
Well, I was hearing that they are volunteering the 15th of January. I don't know that we'll be meeting that fast because everybody's got conflicts and holidays, but the 15th or the week after gives you...
The 15th or the week thereafter, or the 15th or as may otherwise be agreed by the parties would probably make sense if something comes up.
Understood, and it doesn't matter to me, but I just want to make sure that it gets addressed. So as of now, January 15th will be the date that briefs will be due for each of the parties, and if a different date is subsequently agreed upon, that's fine. And the late filed exhibit will be due January 15th as well. Anything else? Okay, that will conclude the public hearing. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was the most heated part of the hearing.
No, yeah,
so
good.
I can, yeah, sorry. I just,